So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review,
right now, right? That's what you say. We get it by now.
Just a little short resume of myself. I'm from New York City, and I have come down here tonight very graciously. Your host here has opened the doors for myself and my wrestler. I am a pro wrestler. I am a manager of wrestlers. And my man, Brutus Beefcake, tonight from Madison Square Garden, New York City, will be here tonight and do a little sashay for each and every one of you lovely ladies. We've selected a song or so that you may recognize. We have selected a song or so that you may be able to really get into the groove, so to speak. So when you hear that music popping, I want you girls to really get with it. And I have brought my man, my main man, Mr. Brutus Beefcake! All right, let's really hear it for him. Come on.
Welcome to Review Away. I am John Pollock, joined by Wei Ting, who this week, his existence is brought to you by ProWrestlingTees.com/law. What a nice shirt you've got on.
I do have my Andre the Giant Pro Wrestling.
See, people feel left out on Review Away. They don't get to see you. They only get to hear you. So I've got to paint the picture.
I think it's actually better, you know. I don't have to, like, I could wear whatever I want. I mean, I wear whatever I want anyway, but, like, I don't even have to wipe my nose. I got a like giant booger in my nose, and like, who cares?
Oh, you know? you clearly have let your guard down in front of me.
Yeah.
The great thing, though, for people out there, when Wei Ting gets a t-shirt, it's his t-shirt for life. Like, Wei literally has shirts from when he was a child that he still wears to this day. Like, shirts from 1995, I believe you have.
As long as they fit me, I mean.
Which is incredible that they still fit you from when you were 11.
If they don't fit me, they go up on the wall.
Or you don't want them. They go up on the wall, that too.
It's weird how, like, yeah, I would have t-shirts from, like, when I was a kid that I still wear. But sometimes I get shirts from, like, you guys that are, like, from, like, last year, but they're too small. So I can't wear them.
You bulked up.
I really haven't, but I mean, I guess like everybody when they're a kid, they have like baggy shirts, right?
Oh, I used to always have baggy clothes, and I've thrown all that stuff out. I was like, it always was in my head when I would go buy clothes, like, oh, they got to be baggy, and right. It's like, dude, I wore stuff that was just ridiculous.
Like
I had like MC Hammer style like fucking jeans that were just like, I look back, it's like, I guess everyone looks back at what they wore 10 years ago and be like, what a loser.
How baggy are we talking?
Dude, I had one pair of jeans that it was
what
like
size?
My belt like I needed to create holes in it to keep my pants up. Like I had to like put a hole into my belt.
Wow, okay.
Cuz it just
Well, that means your belt's too long.
These jeans were just, they were ridiculously big.
Okay.
Like I'm like a 30, 31 inch waist, and I had pants that were like 36 inches. Like, just stupid.
Not that stupid.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I thought the idea of like.
What was your inspiration?
Have inspirations. There was nobody that was.
Did you ever try backwards pants?
Backwards pants?
Yeah.
No.
Like Chris Cross.
I missed this phase. That was before my time.
Oh, okay.
That was like early 90s. I was I have no recollection. I was probably wearing like Ninja Turtle sweatshirts to school at that point.
Never seen anybody try backwards pants in person. Maybe I was too young for that too. But how about like pants? Did you have your pants like did you have the underwear showing? Was that you?
No. That was not never at all. I had the belt. Like I didn't want my pants like falling down. I just wanted the bagginess, but not the slumpiness.
Some people want the pants hanging down though.
What was your clothing like in high school?
High school? I mean, I don't think I really like took notice of clothing. I probably just wore like whatever was around the house. I really didn't pay much attention.
Nothing. You never went through phases of anything? You never went through radical changes to your look?
I guess growing my beard. That first.
In high school?
No, not in high school. Oh, no, okay. Not in high school.
That would have been badass.
In high school?
If you had your Fidel Castro in 2003, that would have been something.
In high school, I was just very plain. I was just sort of like a nerdy looking kid. you know?
Yeah, I look back and it's like I was a total loser as in my teens.
Yeah,
some are going to argue that you haven't really morphed out of that phase.
Oh, wait, wrestling podcasting. Come on, we really, really made it.
I'm super duper with my dates.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, this Tuesday Night Titans was not October 29th. It was October the 30th, WWE Network. Some of their... When they first uploaded all their shows, they were all a date off. And I think I'm the only person in the world that noticed this. But they were all off by a day.
Weird.
And some of them have been fixed, but others have not. And this would be one of them. So it was October 30th, 1984, and not October 29th. Hope that didn't mess up the logo for us, but let's keep it. Because that's the WWE Network's recollection of this Tuesday Night Titans. It's Monday Night Titans.
Monday Night.
A precursor to what would be their biggest night of the week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I read over the past week? A book that we've never done a book review on this, have we?
No.
We might have to.
Okay.
This book is 60 pages.
Okay.
It is JTG's book called Damn, Why Did I Write This Book? And he just talks about how he got heat in the locker room in the WWE. I will say right now that fans can pick or choose if they want to read this. They will be entertained by the stories. I will go so far as to say if you are an aspiring wrestler, if you are an NXT, if you are going down there for a tryout, I would almost say you have to read this book. You have to see how immature some of the performers are that you will be sharing space with, how petty some of the grudges that develop are. Just the, it is literally like reading about children that are on national television, and JTG is a very funny writer. He is extremely entertaining, and he just writes about just all the little things that got him heat. One of the best stories involved at WrestleMania one year, a representative from Beats by Dre came by, and they were giving out headphones to some of the performers. And he came up to the guy. He found him. He said, I'm all out of my headphones, but see me tomorrow night. I'm going to be at Raw. I'll have some more headphones. And JTG, he wanted some Dre headphones. So the next day, he went, and he was able to get one of the last remaining headphones. And he's walking off, and an established star, who he doesn't name, says, hey, I want to get my headphones. You should leave those for talent that is more over than you are.
Whoa.
So the talent ended up going and finding the representative. And then later in the day, two of the divas are talking about JTG and how he took three pairs of headphones when others wanted some. And JTG overheard them talking shit about him. So he confronted them and said, well, we talked to the established star who said you took three sets of headphones for yourself and left none for other people. And JTG denied this. He got heat for this.
Oh, my God.
The other great story. I don't want to ruin his whole book because there are plenty of... Like, that's just the tip of the iceberg of, like, this stupid crap. He's doing an interview with WWF Magazine, kayfabe interview about Crime Time. And he's asked, what makes you and Chad such a great team? And he said, you know what? The two of us, we just... There's a loyalty between us, and we have a lot of respect for one another. And JTG in his mind is saying, I just use the words loyalty and respect, which sounds dangerously close to another wrestler's catchphrase. So he said, wait. Don't use the words loyalty and respect. Let me redo that answer. And the WWF Magazine guy was like, yeah, I understand what you're saying. This is a ridiculous industry. We'll redo it. Well, guess what? The quote ran.
No.
And then JTG, him and Crime Time had been getting over, and he did the deal where he would give his glasses out to the crowd. Mm-hmm. So WWE was going to come out with their own signature JTG glasses. They were going to finally give him merchandise. So he's all set for this merchandise to come out, and he's in the bathroom. And a certain wrestler approached him and said, hey, I was just reading WWE Magazine, and you happen to use a phrase that is very close to mine. And JTG is apologizing, and he's saying, listen, he explains the situation. And the guy agrees. He's like, yeah, sometimes WWE Magazine, they'll do stuff like that and screw you, even though you didn't want that quote in there. But you're going to have to learn your lesson. Your merchandise is not coming out.
Are you kidding me?
Dude, I felt like I was reading about toddlers that go to kindergarten, only they are grown men. And certainly, this is a one-sided story. It's JTG's perspective. Maybe there is some gray area, but it does not stun me one iota that this kind of pettiness is what exists, and I cannot recommend this book enough if you want any kind of job in this business, and how silly everything from the handshakes to, oh my God, you just have to give up your plane seat to a veteran, and it's just, oh my God. It's like, you cannot win. You cannot win if people want to hate you.
Oh, that sounds so...
You need to read it. It's 60 pages. I read this thing in like 2 hours, and I was just aghast at reading all this. It was amazing. Like, nothing that surprised me. Nothing that, if you tell me these stories, I could be stunned that go on. But to actually read these specific instances just confirms a lot of what you hear out there that, oh, God, the internet, they're just make shit up. Probably not. There's probably quite a lot of accuracy that is out there when it comes to just ridiculous, immature games that go on and guys that just get completely cast aside because they bought the same shoes that a talent that is over has the same brand of.
It sounds like the worst place in the world.
It sounds terrible. It sounds god awful that you would ever want to work there.
Oh man!
But everyone does.
Okay, I will definitely check it out.
If you've got a Kindle, it's like $3. It's a $3 book. I cannot recommend this book enough for people out there.
Yeah, so it's an e-book.
It's an e-book, yes. Yeah. Yes, cool. I don't think this will be in bookstores anywhere. But I could really see this catching on with guys where some people don't have the attention span to read a 300-page book.
Yep.
But, you know, 60 pages just on, hey, some stories. JTG might be on. And he's a good writer. He's very funny, very self-deprecating, and... believe me, he does not put himself over as, man, I could have been a main event talent. I think he knew where his role was, thinks that him and Shad could have gotten further than they did, but they didn't. And this was some of the stuff they dealt with in their two runs with the company.
What's it called?
It's called Damn, Why Did I Write This Book? So, some great stories. And it's just story after story.
Yeah, awesome. I'll check it out. I also feel like I'd get really stressed reading it, like stressed from his perspective.
Probably. You probably needed some a come down to recover from just the work environment.
Is there a happy ending?
He wrote a book.
I guess that's a positive. Yeah. Sure.
I mean, he's not really that involved in wrestling to this point. We saw him last year at
Comic-Con.
International Fight Week.
Okay, I saw him at Comic-Con.
Oh, you saw him at Comic-Con as well. Yes. So there you go. That's the JTG mini book review.
Cool.
You ready to get into Tuesday Night Titans?
Do it.
You excited?
Mm-hmm.
October the 30th of 1984. A gold mine of a series, Mr. Ting. I feel any time you and I need a pick-me-up for a review, Tuesday Night Titans is that pick-me-up. It is It is the line of cocaine of wrestling reviews.
Whoa. There's a tag.
That could have been the main source of some of the writing on this.
Yeah.
It was the wild 80s.
Mm-hmm.
They had a sponsor. Levi's Jeans.
Big sponsor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Future endorser of all important Shawn Michaels segments.
Levi's Jeans.
Of course.
As well, young John Pollock wearing his size 35.
Yeah. The show, hosted by Vince McMahon and Lord Alfred Hayes, with some lame Halloween jokes off the top, one of which Vince McMahon refers to Lord Alfred Hayes as their resident Ghostbuster. Lord Alfred Hayes has never heard a funnier joke.
It's our pleasure to introduce to you now TNT's very own Ghostbuster, Lord Alfred Hayes.
How'd you do? I really don't know how to answer that as a Ghostbuster, but I've seen a few ghosts in my time.
We will not have any ghosts here on TNT, I don't believe, but no doubt we will have all kinds of excitement.
Ghostbusters must have just really broken big at this time, because there are like two Ghostbusters jokes.
Well, this is a period piece, if nothing more.
Yeah.
1984. Lord Alfred Hayes, just his laugh to this joke, it was just so fake.
Yeah.
And he's just so excited that we're going to hear from newcomer Brutus Beefcake, which Vince says is going to, that Brutus is going to take it off. Mm-hmm. He's going to take it off. And then we're going to have a visit off the top from Sergeant Slaughter. But first, we go to an on-location shoot at Camp Cobra, where Sergeant Slaughter is training soldiers and leads them in instructions of how they are going to clean up America with some simple rules, such as no more Iranians and no more Russians. It's got to banish these people from our country. Mm-hmm. This was, of course, after the Iranian hostage crisis, so I guess no sympathy from anyone of Iranian descent in the WWF during this time period.
Or in America.
Or in America.
Yeah.
Get them all out.
Get out of here.
We met some of the soldiers that were in training, including Kuhn and Snitzel.
Kuhn and Snitzel.
Yes, okay. If that's their real name. And he starts barking orders at them and asks them if they like Iran, if they like Russia. And then we meet a second guy named Kuhn.
They must have been brothers.
The Kuhn brothers.
Yeah.
He wore the wrong boots, and he wore jeans instead of fatigues. Maybe this was some unexpected product placement on Kuhn's behalf for Levi's. But he was yelled at by Slaughter for wearing fatigues. Not wearing fatigues.
Mm-hmm. I think Sarge is...
Maybe they were just doing their job even properly. You couldn't see the fatigues. They just blended in?
No. Gotcha. I mean, I think Sergeant Slaughter is so good at this. I mean, he must have been, he must have at this point done this gimmick for years, but what's his actual background in the military?
He was perfect for this role, and yeah. This was when he was arguably the number two babyface in the company. I mean, he was at a really high level at 1984 and would have a big fallout with the WWF because he was one of the guys that did push for a union in the 80s and would end up leaving the WWF. Also claimed there was a dispute over him being allowed to do the G.I. Joe series, which turned out to be a great deal of publicity for Sergeant Slaughter, and would be gone from the company a few months after this, would have no part in the first WrestleMania, and would go to the NWA.
Yes. Well, you know, these are all kind of pretty generic skits of these guys playing their characters outside of their wrestling environments, but I mean, Sergeant Slaughter is just tremendous at this, unlike somebody else later on in the show who had to portray his gimmick outside of the ring.
Vince calls Slaughter America's greatest living hero. Their greatest living hero. I'm looking up Sergeant Slaughter here just to make sure we don't discredit his... here we go. He did serve in the U.S. Marine Corps after high school and became a sergeant.
Okay. Legit sergeant. Yeah.
There you go. So, legit sergeant. Obviously. So an extension of himself.
Yeah. He's great at this. Just incredibly charismatic in the way he's like trying to. He's a stereotypical, you know, drill sergeant, but except he's a guy who like really looks the part and can actually wrestle too.
So he comes out to the desk with Lord Al Hayes and Vince McMahon for an interview. The set is decorated with a lone pumpkin on the table to emphasize that Halloween is tomorrow.
A very bare-bones set. Like, this is about as generic of a talk show set as you could get. But it's October, so let's put a pumpkin in the middle of the table.
Slaughter will not reveal the location of Camp Cobra to avoid the Iranians and Russians from finding Camp Cobra. Mm-hmm. They could be under attack.
And you all know what you're here for, don't you?
Yes, sir!
We're here for one thing, and that's America, isn't it?
Yes, sir!
What are we going to do with America? We're going to clean it up, aren't we?
Yes, sir!
We don't want any more Iranians around, do we?
No, sir!
We don't want the Russians invading us, do we?
No, sir!
You know the Cobra Corps stands for what?
America, sir!
That's right, correct, America!
And the men are training to fight for America, refers to them as the Cobra Corps, and he notes how he travels in a camouflage limousine, and people always recognize me. Which means the limousine probably isn't doing its job. So they came back from a commercial break. I just loved Vince's demeanor. I mean, he had like the personality of a walnut during this 1984 period.
And it's so different because we know him today as this top heel. In here to see
even
him
in the 80s, the over-the-top announcer. I mean, he's very subdued in these studio
this show
chats.
This show itself is drastically different in terms of energy from a pro wrestling environment. This was a close set talk show without even a live studio audience, so everything, all these jokes, all these punchlines didn't have any reactions to them. And I think the way, you know, pro wrestlers speak it's so much of it is geared around reaction and based off of reaction, and to get none of that, it felt like a completely different energy for a pro wrestling program.
They came back from the commercial break, and Slaughter notes how all wrestlers from Johnny Rods to the Iron Sheik are trying to take him out, and says he's largely the last stop before guys go after Hulk Hogan. He's the setup guy for the top babyface in the company. And then he shows off these glasses that a child gave him in honor of his father being in the service. And when Vince says the glasses are hard to see through, Slaughter says that when you look through the stars and stripes, you can see anything you want.
What does that mean?
What a heartfelt moment here, that when you look through these stars and stripes glasses, you can see the world. America is the bridge to freedom.
That sounds really stupid.
And love. Then we got a match involving Sergeant Slaughter. Squash match with Charlie Fulton. Huge reaction for Slaughter as he came out. I mean, this crowd, I mean, they love this man.
Yeah.
To this day, this is the tried and true gimmick. The All-American fighting off foreigners. Mm-hmm. This was not a foreigner that he would be taking on. In Charlie Fulton, there was a child in the crowd who had a sign.
Charlie Fulton, who looked like Chad Kroger's uncle.
Might have been.
Canadian.
Maybe this was in the Pacific Northwest somewhere, and Abbotsford, British Columbia native Chad Kroger had an uncle that mm-hmm. was moonlighting as a wrestler. This child had a sign that read, "The Sarge is my buddy." Such PG signs in 1984.
Yeah.
Much different from the signs we saw on our last episode week of Raw from 1998 last week, such as Val Venus, where's your penis? So Vince and Bruno Sammartino are on commentary. Bruno clarifies that America is number one, and Slaughter is right in what he preaches. Everyone else pales in comparison. Fulton actually got the heat, but then Slaughter ducked, hit a clothesline called a cannon, according to Vince, and then applied the Cobra Clutch and defeated young Charlie Kroger and got the victory.
Yeah, it's just a very basic 80s heavyweight match. It's great to just watch the crowd in these and just to see how over these characters were, in particular Sergeant Slaughter, who's a very unique looking man, you know, just the biggest jaw you'd ever seen. And, I think a guy that was like born to either become a professional wrestler or a cartoon character, and both things that he ended up doing.
It's amazing seeing some of the, not to say this was every match, but my God, you go back to the territories, and especially in the 70s and 80s, and the way the crowds would get up for matches, and whether that's in Texas and Memphis. Jesus Christ, here for Charlie Fulton and Sergeant Slaughter. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was just a level of crowd heat that there's matches that achieve that today, but this was, I mean, it was much more widespread, it felt mm-hmm. like. They go back to Vince and Slaughter in the studio, and they chat about his fans, who he calls the Cobra Corps. Says even 97-year-old men want to join the Cobra Corps. And Slaughter clarifies that there isn't anyone in the world who has a following like Sergeant Slaughter, when Vince says that no one in wrestling has a following like him. So not a man short on confidence is Sergeant Slaughter. No one in the world with a larger following than him. Not the president, not God, Sergeant Slaughter. Ruling above everybody. Then they showed footage of fans packing into the ring in Madison Square Garden, just rioting here with Sergeant Slaughter, celebrating in the ring with him. This was a famous visual of fans getting in the ring for Bob Backlund, but showing Slaughter here. And then the crowd recites the Pledge of Allegiance.
That was really cool.
This guy felt like God.
Sure.
Vince asks about people who criticize patriotism. And Vince says that not even the president can bring out this level of patriotism. And he mentions that the election is coming up and people should vote. The original SmackDown, your vote. So he said that the people want him to run for president, and Vince wants him to stick around for some surprises and things of that nature. And then we got the great graphics of coming up next, hot cakes. With a photo of Brutus Beefcake. There were not going to be pancakes. Hot cakes of Brutus Beefcake.
Mm-hmm.
Vince then introduces Beefcake and his manager, Luscious Johnny Valiant, and throws to some rare footage. Very rare. We went to the main event nightclub where Johnny V introduces Beefcake, who is going to come out and, quote, give a sachet for the ladies. A good old sachet, which does not mean fake autographed 8x10s. And then this porn music, which is the best description I can give it, comes onto the screen, and Beefcake comes out onto the dance floor in his bare feet, takes off his tights. They show this old woman in the audience. Another woman grabs his ass, and we go back to Vince laughing and calling it most bizarre and the most bizarre thing they've ever aired on TNT, as Brutus was, quote, doing his thing and would do his thing down into his trunks.
Yeah.
This was creepy.
Well, I mean, I didn't know that this guy... I always wondered why his name was Brutus Beefcake. I didn't know he had a stripper gimmick.
That was always the subtleness. I mean, the stripper from San Francisco. I mean, the subtleties were there, I guess.
Gotcha. Well, I mean, all I kept thinking about was, you know, these poor women. Just, you know, you're spending a night with your girlfriends. You decide to go to the male strip club one evening. And then you get this guy. You get this guy who just... He can't dance, much less strip. So to see this man try to do a striptease was some of the most awkward footage I've ever seen. This is not, like...
They had to do a hell of an edit job on this, too. Like, just, like, freeze frames, and then they'd be cutting. It was just...
How would you describe his style of dance? His style of teasing?
I don't know what the level was. I mean, the dance skill. I mean, it was essentially just like the little strut he would do for his whole career.
He just did that strut. That was his only move. And Johnny Valiant, though, I think would make one hell of a strip club DJ.
I guess so. He came out and... Like, man, I've always looked at Brutus Beefcake as a guy that's just, like, very minimal talent. I will say, compared to this time period, like... He was just horrible.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Like, even just sitting there.
Well.
He was also had the gimmick of a mute during this time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he had somebody there to speak for him, so he played the guy who doesn't say much. But, I mean, it's so, yeah, very, very weird to see a stripper gimmick with this guy.
Beefcake and Johnny V are out to the desk. They come out to booze, and Johnny's just doing his shtick about how great Brutus is. And then Vince asks if Brutus has been tested, which, based on his physique, I would say he has not. And this was pretty bad dialogue from Johnny V. And then Johnny V says, "No one is going to give him a bum steer while I'm around." And in case you didn't get the subtle homosexual innuendo, he said it once again, that Brutus is not going to get a bum steer while Johnny V is around. So we got a match involving Brutus Beefcake and Tony Garea. This was when Brutus Beefcake was billed from parts unknown.
Why do you need to bill Brutus Beefcake from parts unknown? Why does he have to be mysterious?
A male stripper is on par with a monster. He came out in his zebra tights. Gorilla Monsoon and Gene Okerlund were on commentary. This was actually taped a week prior at Madison Square Garden. Garea hit a headlock takeover, and Monsoon takes a shot at Garea for being cheap when he would go out. Say he's a guy that has deep pockets but short arms. There was a cross body to Brutus for a two count, super slow referee count. Gorilla notes that Beefcake has 23-inch biceps, just always coming up short of Hulk Hogan. Brutus then hits an Irish whip, misses the running elbow in the corner, and then Brutus takes a drop kick. He goes to the floor, chases Brutus into an O'Connor roll. Garea then misses Brutus and lands with a flying knee, and Brutus hits the win. Hits the flying knee, later the high knee, mm-hmm. for the win over Tony Garea.
Yeah. I actually liked watching this match, and in particular, I liked Garea's style a lot. Just a really old school, soft, and technical style that, you know, with a lot of flow, as they say in jiu-jitsu.
Beefcake was just, if you were just a child that watched this and believed this was real, like Brutus Beefcake as a performer, as a character, like just in his matches, he sucked. Like, he didn't even take most of the match. Just won the match out of nowhere with this high knee. I mean, there was nothing to get behind with this guy.
He's supposed to be a bad guy.
Well, he wasn't good. There was nothing menacing about him. There was nothing to worry about. It was like if you were a fan of your top baby faces and here was the new threat, very minor one.
We're all supposed to be threatened by... we're all supposed to be homophobic, and that's why we're supposed to be afraid of him.
I wonder what Camp Cobra's views were on Brutus Beefcake in 1984.
Probably grouped him in with the Iranians and Russians.
They should have had Ronald Reagan and Walter Mondale right before the election come on and share their thoughts about some of these characters and the messages they are sending. Back in the studio, Johnny V does not allow Brutus to speak unless you give him money, which years later would kind of be Brutus's gimmick. If you asked for him for an interview, it would be very tough to convince him.
All right.
Though
How
I can,
much time?
It better be good. Though I can say he never did ask for money. That would be another 80s star who recently tried that with me, who I said, no, that's not how shit works. He allows Brutus to say two words, and then in the most unintentionally funny delivery, it's like he struggled as a baby to say his first words.
Brutus, Beefcake.
Did you hear it?
This is horrible. This is just all fucking horrible. A goddamn waste of television film.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say it was great. It's
no, I could definitely not say it was great.
It's fun to watch and laugh at.
Like, this was viewed as quality television by the WWF in 1984. It was like, this is great stuff.
I think it's a very novel idea to go out there and try to tell stories of your characters outside of the wrestling environment in this context.
I don't disagree with the idea of what they were trying to accomplish. I just question the actual execution and results of what they attempted to set out to do.
I guess some of the problem is, like, these are the wrestling characters are, I mean, they're supposed to be one-dimensional. And so what you get is, you know, 5 minutes of this guy in one sentence, this is what he is. Drill sergeant. Let's watch him being a drill sergeant. Male stripper. Let's watch him strip. And that's what we get. You have to fill a whole hour of that.
Simple formula.
Actually, this show is like an hour and a half.
Dude, this was a long show.
Yeah. I can't believe they filled this much time.
This would have gone into a two-hour slot.
This show really could have been half an hour, honestly. But
22 minutes would have been fine. So they then ran a match with Big John Studd with Bobby Heenan against Special Delivery Jones. Studd ended up bleeding from his forehead. Maybe Dolph Ziggler last week was getting ready for a review away, watched this match with this headbutt, and thought, hey, I'm going to do this to Sheamus on Sunday.
No.
Because this was almost identical to what happened. Special Delivery Jones is headbutting him, punches Studd, going after the cut. Jones gets a two count, tries to slam Studd and fails, gets beaten down, and then Special Delivery gets sent to the floor, and Jones comes back in with headbutts, runs into a punch, and we get an elbow drop by Big John Studd for the win. If you are not familiar with the Special Delivery Jones character, he relied heavily on headbutts because in 1984, African Americans had harder heads, along with Samoans.
Oh.
Yeah. So, the more you know. It's like an NBC spot. Then we had the most entertaining segment of the whole show, which I thought was going to be terrible and turned into awkward comedic greatness. The advice to the lovelorn segment with luscious Johnny V being asked love questions from fans that wrote in to the pervert Vince McMahon. This was the Mr. McMahon character in the 1984 body of Vince McMahon and letting that voice come out like just a skeezy pervert asking these questions.
Yeah. These are definitely pervy questions. Probably made up by Vince.
We go too often and just talk about the 80s being like this PG wholesome period. And there are certainly areas of the WWF in the 80s that was, I won't say PG. I mean, they got their shit in, so to speak.
I mean, I just saw this as a segment, you know, on a kid's show that was written for adults. But actually, this whole Tuesday Night Titans wasn't necessarily targeted towards children. It wasn't Saturday afternoon. This was probably had a more adult.
This was the NXT of 1984.
Probably had a bit more of an adult slant. And it's Vince here with a lot of these questions are awesome.
These are great questions.
I love these questions.
The first woman writes in, first of all, the idea that they had three female viewers tuning into TNT was comedy in itself, and talks about the tremendous physiques the men possess in the WWF. And now when she looks at her husband's physique pales in comparison. And Johnny V answers this question looking off camera to somebody answering this, presumably to another camera, and just tells her to stop looking at other men.
What's interesting about this show is that clearly a lot of the reactions from the performers here were just completely non-scripted. A lot of the
Johnny Valiant looked completely lost.
Yeah, a lot of the interviews themselves, it just seemed like it was Vince in character, like a pro wrestling interview where, you know, Vince McMahon throws out a question to the performer and the performer would have to improvise in character to make sense of it. This segment, though, it seemed very much like Valiant wasn't necessarily in on the joke, or if he was, he wasn't necessarily comfortable answering.
That's what made it entertaining to me.
A lot of these sexual questions, and it was just odd because the host here was the one basically being the sexual one, whereas the heel manager seemed to be the naive, shy one.
Yeah,
it was kind of awkward.
Yeah, it was like they were doing their own role playing.
Yes,
Vince and Luscious Johnny V. The next woman writes in and says, she and her partner are into role-playing, and of late they have been wearing executioner masks, Mil Moscris masks, which I'm sure the Mil Moscris role-player would not be on their back. And
what?
Because Mil Moscris wouldn't put any guys over.
Oh, God.
I would have been great in this segment. 1984, Luscious Johnny P would have been fantastic. She recently wore a mask, and is asking for advice about this role playing, and Luscious Johnny V.
You missed it. The guy writes in and says, "I recently put a mask on my wife, and it's made things much better in bed."
Okay, and Luscious Johnny V. just says that
maybe you're talking about somebody that unfortunately went through a serious burn. Maybe somebody had a tremendous acne situation where they feel the only way out of the life is through a mask.
I don't think that's what you mean. This gentleman means here at all.
She's referring to her husband, or are we referring to the wife?
He is referring to the wife.
Well, I don't blame you. Because I've had several situations like myself like that. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with a woman that wears a mask.
Like Johnny V just completely missed out on the joke, and the whole time Vince McMahon is like, no, Luscious Johnny V, I don't think you understand what this man's saying. He keeps trying to reiterate the joke. I don't know if that itself was supposed to be the joke, like Johnny V not understanding it, but I think Vince's questions were very pervy and very funny, but Johnny V didn't really have any good comebacks.
The next one was just... This woman wrote in saying, "Hi, I'm very attractive and rich, but I'm only interested in ugly men. Do you have any recommendations?"
Like, I just picture, you know, their group of writers, Vince McMahon at the helm, coming up with this list of you know, questions from the perspective of these fictitious women watching their program.
Yeah. This is what he views as women.
Yeah, this is what women think.
Oh, so... Luscious Johnny V said, well, Hulk Hogan is filthy ugly. And Vince is just insulted at this idea that Hulk Hogan is not as hot as compared to Brutus Beefcake.
So he asked Johnny V to rate Brutus Beefcake out of 10.
He's, what did he give
him?
Like,
I'll give him a Brutus Beefcake. I'll give him a 15, 20, maybe 35.
35 out of 10.
Yeah. And then, like, Vince just basically continues to goad him to name ugly wrestlers.
He's like, Tito Santana, Junkyard Dog, Sergeant Slaughter, they're stone ugly. Stone ugly. And then the final one, the kicker. A woman writes in about having a fantasy about being in a 16 to 20 man battle royal. She's got a variety picked out. She can't quite put her finger on how many. A 16 to 20 man battle royal. Am I weird? And Luscious Johnny V says,
First, I'd have to say, what kind of a group plan do you have? Do you have open-end policy? Do you have a group coverage? Do you have a type of deal, a double indemnity? Do you have a disability clause in your contract? In other words, anybody would want to encounter a 16 to 20 man battle royal, even a 10 man battle royal, they have to have kind of a death wish type situation, Vince. I mean, that's a situation where somebody's, number one, sick, number one, they're into pain, number one, they're not into longevity, number one, they have no loved ones or somebody they're waiting for them at the end of the shower.
I don't think that's what they mean when they say involved in a battle royal. I don't think that they really want to be physically involved in the over the top rope portion of the battle royal. I don't think that's what they had in mind.
What did they have in mind? They want to partake of it, or they want to see it, or they want to watch it, or what they want to do. I mean, clarify yourself.
I cannot speak for this person. I would assume that this person would, in some fashion, fantasizes about being in the ring with 16 to 20 men in some sort of their own concoction of a battle royal.
That's what I'm saying. Anybody that want to partake, that's like jumping into the Battle of the Bulge. That's like jumping into the Iwo Jima. That's like jumping into Pearl Harbor. That's like jumping into the middle of the Super Bowl. You know what I mean? With no pads, with no helmet, with no cleats, with no game plan, with no nothing. Anybody would jump into a battle royal with 16 men.
So Vince is not going to let him dance around this. Says, no, I think she means something else involving 16 to 20 men. Basically saying everything short of a giant orgy that this woman is interested with the roster of the WWF. And Johnny B just plays dumb. This was awkward at its finest.
I feel like this segment would have worked better if it was Vince and, like, you know, I don't know, just somebody who was more willing to play along. It just seemed like Valiant here was, like, maybe...
someone quicker off their feet, like a Bobby Heenan.
Sure, but, you know, or somebody like...
Lord Alfred Hayes would have been creepy funny.
Okay, that would have been funny.
Yeah, my word, 16 to 20, you better have some protection.
But I feel like just even a character more comfortable, you know, with sexuality would have been better than...
If only Brutus could talk.
Yeah.
That would have been his breakout performance. So just a real insight into the mind and the psyche of Vince McMahon in 1984.
Very funny. Sick guy.
Here's the precursor of the man that would become the most powerful man in wrestling, talking about battle royal orgies, just to get an idea of what he was thinking about calling those Royal Rumbles. Coming up, dog food. I thought we were literally going to see JYD eating dog food in what would be one of the most appalling segments WWF has ever produced. But no, that was not the case. JYD comes out in the greatest outfit in the history of TNT. He was wearing maroon pants with a matching maroon shirt, a gold chain, and a sailor's hat. This was awesome. This was what I would have worn in high school if I had watched TNT growing up. This would have been my outfit if I didn't go to a school that required a uniform.
You don't have to wear a uniform now.
You're right. I'm going out to the Goodwill, and I'm going to find a maroon outfit, a gold chain, please, and a sailor's hat.
Next time on Review Raw, you'll wear this?
Yeah. We got to do a fashion show one day. They talk about his weight. Some Art Donovan questions off the top. He's around 293, and then we get into his diet. In high school, he used to eat black-eyed peas, which have a whole different meaning in 2015.
Well, I mean, it's still a food that exists.
I once saw at a Halloween costume someone who who dressed up as a green pea with a shiner, and they were a black-eyed pea. Then he talked about wrinkle steaks, which was the New York slang that they used, wrinkle steaks. Then they went over to a food station with two women wearing matching sweaters that read Yellow Bowl.
They're from a restaurant.
Yes, called Yellow Bowl. Yeah. Venice and Eva. And they prepared collard greens, chitlins, which were wrinkle steaks, yams, short ribs, and these women are explaining this food to Vince, who has, like, never heard of any of the, like, yams and short ribs. It was like Vince was hearing these foods for the first time. He sounded like the most sheltered individual you could imagine.
Fine. And then over on the right, what is that concoction of, it's like peppers of some kind? What is that?
This is short ribs of beef.
All right.
You have green peppers and onions and your gravy in here.
Mm. Boy, that smells delicious. In front of that, what is that, such a sort of dessert, maybe.
Yeah, this is a peach cobbler.
Uh-huh.
Explain these short ribs. And then Alfred Hayes is off to the side, And as they're going through all these different foods, Vince says...
Now, one thing I think that, Alfred, you recognize, and that would be the white stuff.
Yes.
Back here on the back of the table, this white stuff, that looks like rice. Is that rice?
Oh, he knows about this.
Okay.
That's what it is.
Alfred, if there is one thing you recognize here, it's the white stuff. Rice! Holy fuck! Let's get away from the black food and move over to our cup of tea.
The white stuff.
God, man, the subtlety here. And then they go to investigate the red sauce, which Alfred Hayes refers to as tomato sauce. Do you have some tomato sauce? It was hot sauce. JYD eventually tells Vince to just shut up while he's eating, as he's really getting bothered by this. And they start making the ribs. Vince is asking the woman, what's the difference between red and black pepper?
It was like the oddest, like...
It's like a child with just any question that came to mind he asked.
I mean, that's sort of the role of the host. But this was just almost like... It was just odd because this was like Martha Stewart Living hosted by Vince McMahon. And just a real difference from the Vince that we come to know now.
Vince was such a nerd. Like, such a nerd in this period. Just loved to fuck with Alfred Hayes. I think these two genuinely got along with each other. Because he just loved to break this guy's balls. We saw a match with Junkyard Dog and the Butcher Paul Vachon, with Jack Reynolds and Angelo Mosca on commentary. Mosca notes how JYD played for the Green Bay Packers. He did not. Vachon rakes the back and the eyes of JYD, who then comes back and he rakes the back of Vachon, bites the ear, and then Vachon goes to the floor, comes back, takes a body slam, and JYD pins Vachon. We go back to the food station where JYD says he's now up to 300 pounds. And then the final segment was...
How about those ribs?
Yeah.
You love ribs.
I know. And man, they made these quick. These didn't look that great, to be honest. They look pretty they look bare bones.
Nothing on these cameras look amazing.
By the way, this summer, me and Way are introducing a new segment on Review Away. Way and I are going to go on a tour of all the rib joints in Toronto, and we're going to do our own Vince McMahon, Lord Alfred Hayes food segment each week on Review Away.
Called?
You've Got to Be Ribbing Me. With John Pollock and Wei Ting.
Wow, that's pretty good. I just put you on the spot there. That's actually really good.
Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Wei sent me a list of the best rib places in Toronto.
Yeah.
And throughout the summer, we're going to hit every one of these fucking places.
Okay, we'll do a rib review.
And they're a write-off here at work.
No, don't know about that.
Oh, well, we'll try.
I don't think they'll go for that one.
Okay. Baron Mikhail Skakluna came out, the late Baron. He hopped onto the stage. This startled Vince McMahon. They discussed his team with Curtis Iaquea and the Baron. An old timer. He was not going to. He wasn't going to break character here. I mean, he was a heel, and he defended his actions, and said, "We never broke the rules," as Vince alleges.
So, hey, explain to me. This guy was he was not an active wrestler, obviously, at this point.
No, not at this time.
So, Vince was just like welcoming these guys back.
Well, he was one of those guys that had been a staple in the Northeast, right. And I mean, his days had largely been finished at this point, but was very much kind of in that family that was always going to be taken care of.
But it was like Vince McMahon kind of recognizing, you know, because I just picture you wouldn't. Let's say they did Tuesday Night Titans again on the WWE Network right now. They would obviously welcome a lot of current stars, but do you see them welcoming back, you know, somebody from like the 90s that no longer shows up? Would they have somebody on the last segment?
I think possible. I mean, we see tons of guys from like the 90s and stuff that they bring in for various angles and stuff. I know it's not like the same comparison point, but I mean, he was a, you know, closely associated with him. I'm looking up here to see when his actual retirement was. He went into the Hall of Fame, the WWF Hall of Fame in 96. Yeah, he would have been pretty much done. He retired in 1983, so not all that removed by in 1984 from his in-ring. But we saw this on the last TNT we reviewed, where they kind of did like a Legends segment,
right?
Which is something that they would get away with. I mean, from you know into the 90s and 2000s, it was very rare they would go back in time. Now yeah. It kind of benefits them a bit more, and with the Hall of Fame every year. But it was something they tended to ignore, and I never understood why.
I really like the fact that they went back into their history and acknowledged that that stuff existed. People like this existed.
And I like these old matches that they dig up on TNT and play just even brief clips of. We had Chief J. Strongbow and Sonny King against Kakluna and King Curtis Iaukea. There was a spot where they're teaming up on Strongbow and choking him, and Baron's just defending his actions and say, back then, that's just the way matches went.
Yeah. I mean, talk about an old match. This match featured the longest nerve hold I've ever seen. And when I say nerve hold, like, nothing dramatic about this. I'm putting my hands on your shoulders as if I'm massaging you from the front, and that is the move. They're just standing upright.
Like, hey, man, you had to make a lot of towns. You couldn't go all out.
Every movement here, like from the baby faces, the heels, they're so over the top and so exaggerated. You know, the guy goes for the hot tag, and like the heels, like, no, like just like way over the top, like you see today.
It's hard to watch, you know, these matches when you're just kind of trained to what you watch so regularly today.
Oh,
but
completely different.
There's such an art I love about doing so little but making the most out of it, and the crowd reacting. And to me, it's like at the most basic foundation, that is what I love about pro wrestling, is guys that are just doing the least and getting the most out of. And this was an example of that. Not that this was any extremely fantastic match or anything, but to hear this crowd react to such simplistic things, I think there's a real art to that. And it ended with there was a running boot. Sonny King made the save as an example of the other team breaking the rules. And Baron's like, look, they did it too. And a huge reaction for the eventual hot tag to King. And then Baron used a foreign object from the trunks onto King as they cut away from the match. We didn't even get the finish to this.
Didn't need it.
I guess not. And then they went over his exercise routine and said that twice a week they pull up the wrestling mats and they go at it. He's doing shoots twice a week. And tells a story about an older match he had with Lord Alfred Hayes. And Vince, under his breath to end the segment, refers to Lord Alfred Hayes as a potato farmer. This would have been lost on so much of the audience in 1984, I bet. And then, finally, we had pretty much a montage of matches involving the Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkov, who were one of the lead heel tag teams. First, they defeated jobbers Joe Mitro and Joe Moskra. Joe Murto, I'm sorry. I don't want to disgrace his name. With Sheik just stomping him. They cut to another match with Salvatore Bellomo and a young Steve Lombardi in purple trunks. Very throwback here with Steve Lombardi. With Sheik headbutting the gut of Lombardi and then winning with the camel clutch. And then finally, we got Sheik and Volkov against Brian Madden and Robbie Parliament.
Doing
a Canadian gimmick.
A classic.
Yes, and Sheik submits Parliament with the camel clutch. Just three consecutive squash matches, one after the other. And look, this is what they should do with Harper and Rowan. We should just get a montage of house show matches of them murdering guys.
Man, what a physique on the Iron Sheik.
Hey.
You never really get to see this footage.
And wait till you see him on next week's review. The tanned Iron Sheik.
Ooh, okay.
Yes, a little hint.
But I mean, I love watching all this old footage in clip form. I don't know if I could really take a full show of this stuff. I think it gets old quick. But in this context, you know, just short little 2-3 minute clips, it was just a really fun glimpse into the style of the time and even just the production and the look of the TV and the look of the physiques and the look of the audience at the time. It was nice.
Yeah, and you just have to look at what the goal here was, just to show this destructive tag team. And look, they're just killing guys. And it was a very effective model and worked in this instance. So that would bring us to the final segment of the show, where it ended with Vincent Hayes at the desk. Hayes notes how the Iron Sheik is back to championship form, and also notes that the Russian is very aggressive. As they roll the credits, and the one standout was the assistant director of the show, a young Kevin Dunn.
That is right.
Whose father was longtime director for the WWF, and then Kevin Dunn would assume that role. Mm. And to this day, Kevin Dunn, man that has a lot of power.
Sure.
Ask Alex Greenfield.
Okay.
They're good friends. And that wrapped up a bizarre yet...
What episode of Tuesday Night Titans is not bizarre?
That's true. We're 2 for 2 on these reviews. Such a weird show. Not a show that I could ever imagine watching on a weekly basis in 1984. But, man, was it different at the time. And people hated this show because it was so far in the cartoon direction that people were not at least willing to put wrestling under that category. I mean, there was a certain level of camp, but this was going in such a far direction that there was a lot of pushback from those at the time that this was ruining wrestling.
This show, really?
Well, look at the time period. I mean, this wasn't the era of, you know, wacky angles every week and goofball characters. I mean, you got goofy angles in Memphis, but very isolated. And the WWF was pretty serious territory at the time. And this was a stark change.
You had these, especially in the '80s, I think these very loud, over the top characters that I think fit really well when you're looking at it from, you know, like 40 feet away. From the audience into the crowd, I think somebody screaming like Mr. Fuji or whatever, Johnny Valiant, would seem very appropriate and very natural. But you put him in like a closed set on this like very calm talk show atmosphere with nobody in the audience, and it just it feels at this point, obviously, it feels very staged or feels very fake and kind of out of place. And I think it's just so interesting because I don't see them ever doing anything like this today. You know, like segments that just really I don't think benefited anybody. Like segments like, you know, Sal Palomo baking a boat out of paper or Junkyard Dog showing off soul food. Like it does nothing to help anybody. It's just TV time and honestly money wasted on these ribs. I mean, the ribs look fine. But
the rib was the show.
Yeah.
apparently on the talent that found out what they were doing in studio. A bizarre show, a weird show. Can't say I was bored during this show, which is a credit to a 90-minute show.
You saw Brutus Beefcake in a banana hammer.
And we got him to and you got to hear him speak. So, small miracles. So I give this show a 4.5 out of 10. I know I'm putting it,
sure.
I'm giving it a lot of credit, but at the end of the day, I'm not going to say this was some blowaway to 90-minute show. 4.5.
3 out of 10.
Oh, wow, 3.
Wait, wow. Is it that big of a...
Wow! 1.5 below me.
What an upset.
Wow. Okay, we're going to go to the feedback thread. Stuart from Scotland. This is my first review, although I've been a listener for a few years now. Well, thank you, Stuart. The first segment in the show was really bad and cheesy, but in a good way. From Slaughter almost corpsing to the questionable names of a couple of the recruits, not to mention the international fear that must have been inflicted of the enemies of the U.S. when Slaughter asked to see what they've got, and we get to see exactly what they have in the form of 3 press-ups before we cut back to the studio, where we are told that they were clearly an elite bunch of guys. I love this tongue-in-cheek presentation. I wonder how a wrestler running a paramilitary training camp would go down today. I was actually surprised how over the Sarge was as a face, because say what you want about WrestleMania 7, the Sarge played an awesome heel. And he also notes he's cringing from watching the Beefcake segment.
We got a Dwayne in Ireland. I don't think I was mentally prepared for that Beefcake performance. Thank God no one walked in on me while that was going on, because I don't think I was also very concerned. I watched this at work. And meanwhile, like we got an actual TV station running in the background as I'm watching these shows, and here I am watching Brutus Beefcake striptease. Thank God no one walked in on me while that was going on, because I don't think an explanation of, oh, it's just wrestling, would have covered that segment. Brutus may well have ended up being the man with no name, but for a moment in time, I wished I was the man with no eyes.
Oh. All right. We go to our next bit of feedback.
You should read his name.
Hideo Pastrami. If that's his real name. The set is pure 80s. Backdrop looks like it was painted as a college project. The table had a weird mat and a pumpkin. Massive budget for this show. I've never seen Sergeant Slaughter in his Cobra gear before, or with any great amount of hair. Neither looked right. I was also struck by how big Sergeant Slaughter's face is. Strange observation, I know, but never mind.
Not strange at all. This guy, man.
He even made note of how big his chin was.
His chin is like his calling card. I mean, him and Leno, I'd say his might be even bigger than Leno's.
Yeah, it was a... Don't worry. The humor was very tongue-in-chin. I've never seen Sergeant... Watching a match from the early 80s shows just how much pro wrestling has developed on a technique level, but the stories remain the same. USA versus Russia. That's true. Brutus Beefcake. Dear, oh dear. While watching that segment, I was sick in my mouth a little, and as then he appeared in his miniature underwear, I began to question my life choices. Luscious Johnny Valiant looked like an incredibly camp sheriff when they arrived for the interview. I imagine Vince wanted to slap Johnny every time he called it Worldwide Wrestling Federation. Rockstar Spud wears the bow tie better than Beefcake. Special Delivery Jones and Big John Studd. It happened. Good to see an early Bobby Heenan. Dear Johnny, another set made on a shoestring by small children. The segment had McMahon humor all over it. I have no idea what the purpose of this part was. JYD talking about food was a fun segment, if only due to its insane level of awkwardness involving the two ladies. Alfred Hayes stating he would be wary of eating onions for social circumstances made me laugh. Vince was talking about the food like he had never eaten in his life. I also never thought I'd see a cookery segment in any WWE programming, and Junkyard Dog never stopped eating. 5 pumpkins on a coffee table out of 10.
All right, we go to Chris from Winnipeg. Since getting the network, TNT has become a guilty pleasure. The obvious low-budget quality gives it a car crash-like quality to where I can't turn away from watching it. The biggest thing that always gets me with these old episodes is how far the WWF would come in such a short time. They're here performing in what seems to be a 3,000-seat auditorium, then the fast track to the Silver Dome less than 3 years later. If the Cobra Corps is for the elite, I'd hate to see the people that were considered not elite. Sarge just has to be the worst hard-ass drill sergeant I've ever seen. What can be said about the Brutus Beefcake segment? Bizarrely homoerotic doesn't quite cover it. Valiant dancing, along with him, makes it even more uncomfortable looking. Vince seemed to enjoy that segment a bit much after coming back from it. I'll assume the music that we're all familiar with was replaced for the generic music on the network.
And finally, from Debbie in Alberta, who I don't think has any questions for the Lovelorn, writes in, watching Tuesday Night Titans this week brought back some fond memories of summer vacations from the 80s. It was one of the American wrestling shows my family would watch in our hotel room when we went on our cross-border road trips in the U.S. This particular episode had too little Bobby Heenan and Gorilla Monsoon and way too much Brutus Beefcake. His original mid-80s gimmick of a tacky, ineffectual male stripper just wasn't doing it for me. I'm not sure what it was, but maybe it had something to do with the fact that I had to half cover my eyes so I didn't have to look full on at Ed Leslie doing a strip tease in a scuzzy basement. At least he never spoke. As for Luscious Johnny V, his old school carny sleaves reminded me why we booed him so much at WWF house shows. The rest of the show came off as a routine mid-80s show to me, but had no standout interviews or matches, except that seeing Nikolai Volkoff and Iron Sheik as a brand new team was certainly a treat. Everything seemed designed to keep interest firmly grounded in house shows where fans could follow an entire storyline that would have very little TV exposure from beginning to end. 2 out of 10 full Monty's and a viewing of Magic Mike for me to remind myself what bare male abs should look like. Well, if anything, this was a refresher for everybody, and Brutus Beefcake and his introduction to the Worldwide Wrestling Federation.
What was the official name at the time?
Of who?
Well, when did they go through with the name change?
To the barber?
No, to World Wrestling Federation.
Oh, it had been, as they went national, they got rid of the Y just to the WWF. It was after Vince's purchase of the company from his dad, so post-82.
Okay, so I guess in 2 years you figured Johnny Valiant would have...
Well, it had been a slight, a...
slow transition.
Took people a while to get WWF out of their vocabulary, mm-hmm. I guess. I still call it WWF time and again, such as this show at the beginning. So.
I feel like if it was originally like a program that aired under that banner, I'll still call it WWF.
So there you go. That was our look at Tuesday Night Titans from October of 1984, a show that I can definitely see us revisiting many times down the road. Always a fun review of Tuesday Night Titans. Next week on the show, we are going to be joined by a guest reviewer who's going to join us for the entire program. He is Todd Martin, and he will be on the program as we are going to review the 1990
Great American Bash, headlined by Ric Flair and Sting.
Oh.
So that will be coming up next week on the program. Also, the return of Jim Ross calling the product alongside Bob Caudle.
Okay, he's not on the show.
No. He is going to be reviewing. He's going to be reviewed by the reviewers.
Yes. Right.
Yes. We'll also be joined by Ric Flair, Sting.
No, none of these people.
Flying Brian.
None of these people will be on.
No, they will
on the podcast.
No, you're right.
We got Todd Martin.
Todd Martin will be the only person joining us.
Yeah.
All right. So that's going to be coming up next week. You can, of course, watch The Great American Bash 1990 on the WWE Network or whatever other means. I really don't care where you watch
these
shows.
I believe, actually, this show is up on YouTube, too.
Okay.
If you guys wanted to. No, I mean this Tuesday night time.
It is. It is up on YouTube. We did post it in the feedback thread, so you can go back and watch it. If our review is just so stunning that you have to go and see this for yourself, it is up there, so you can go check it out. As for the rest of our shows, of course, on Thursday, Jason Agner and Braden Harrington will have an extensive rundown of the NXT TakeOver special, which is happening, if you're listening to this on Wednesday, tonight. A show that Wei Tang is going to be watching.
Yes.
Meaning it gets a recommendation.
Not yet.
Oh, not yet.
It could be awful.
It could be awful. You're right. So they'll have a full review to determine if it was great, awful, or indifferent on Thursday. And then later on this week, we'll have Brian Mann and Nate Milton joined by Damian Abraham for a special mailbag edition of the show. And then this weekend on The Law, we're going to be joined by Samoa Joe at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. You can catch all of our shows at liveaudiowrestling.com. We have a show virtually every single day up on the site. We've got Review of Raw, which airs Tuesdays on television at 11 a.m., 7 p.m. Eastern Time. I never know when we have new listeners, so I feel I got to do the reset every now and then so people are aware of what shows we have, which is everything, every time. Yeah. You should be going to our site multiple times a day, daily news updates.
My name is Wei. This is John, the other person on the show.
There are people that have met us that have thought the names are reversed.
Oh, okay. I guess we never really say. I guess at the top you say that.
I wonder how similar our voices sound in person. I don't appear to sound like you, but
our voices don't really sound alike at all. But I've had some people, at least the way we talk, it's completely different. I'm even looking at the waveform that we're recording this.
Oh, very different.
On.
Very different worlds.
Your waveform is way larger. Mine, you can barely even tell it's there.
But you know what brings us together, Wei? Not wrestling. But Levelator.
That's right.
It evens everything out.
Yeah.
Your lows and my highs come together to form a coherent sound.
What a metaphor.
Yeah. How beautiful. As we go out here, we're going to go out with a song this week.
Okay.
Because I want to give some love to our good pal, friend of the show, Shane Smith, who is obviously... he has been on What's Next in the past with Braden Harrington, and Braden and Shane recently collaborated on this rap video that is available online that you can go check out. I should really find where you can go. Maybe type in Shane Smith Access Denied on YouTube to watch this video. And Wei is someone that has worked with Braden Harrington in the past on rap projects.
I am a Braden Harrington Joker Radio alum.
I mean,
performer.
The
yes.
Brady is really building quite the empire for himself.
Shane Smith, Access Denied. Let me just even see if this...
The video must be watched.
Shane Smith. Yeah, S-H-A-Y-N-E, Smith. Shane Smith, Access Denied, and one Hulk Hogan.
Yes, Hulk Hogan has a cameo in this rap video.
Oh, wait, sorry. This is not Shane Smith. Shane Smith is a...
Not to be confused with the guy from Vice.
Yeah, so... let's figure out the actual.
Yeah, I'm gonna look it up.
The worst plug ever.
Hello.
Hey, is this?
Hey, what's going on?
Is this the Brady?
Yeah, it is.
Hey, it's Pollock and it's Wei. Is it cool if we play Shane's rap song at the end of Review Away?
100%.
Where can people find this video online that want to watch the video after hearing the video, after hearing the song?
You can go to youtube.com/nolimitbrand or search Access Denied by Limitless, but it's L-I-M-B-I-T-L-I-S-S.
Okay.
That's his rap name.
Perfect. All right. And
I can send you the MP3 if you'd like, but you can just rip it off YouTube as well.
Yeah, that's what I'll probably do. Quickly, tell our listeners what your contribution was to this, the Brady.
When I met Shane, he was just starting to motivational speak for a career, and naturally, I'm just an outgoing person, so I offered to help in the speaking career. And then he found out that I also produce music, like instrumentals for fun, as all our listeners know and Wei Ting knows. So I said, hey, if you write any lyrics, I can make a beat for you, no problem. And I wrote a chorus for him. He filled in the blanks with his story. I made the music. And then, we were actually recording the song like 3 years ago. It's really hard to get people to make music videos for, well, little or no money. So we finally found someone, this guy named Trey, who's recently joined our No Limit kind of crew. So we made a music video now, and hopefully we get to inspire people and motivate people with his story. Because, I mean, no legs in one hand and he's rapping. It's pretty cool and pretty unique. I think that's why I'm kind of involved in it.
Where are you going right now, Braden? It sounds like you're on your way somewhere.
Yeah, I'm totally like, I'm just walking. I'm kind of on my daily fast walk. Not a jog, but like.
Oh, you're exercising.
I'm out of breath, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Got me at the wrong time, but it's okay. I'm always ready.
This will help your cardio to do an interview while you're running.
Yeah, it's even almost getting hit by a car.
Okay, we're gonna let you go. I'm very concerned about you. Wei was in a car wreck on Sunday. We don't want you to get hit by a car because.
No, I'm fine.
We need you to do what's next on Thursday.
Okay. Actually, I think we might be doing it Wednesday night, right after the takeover special.
Oh, that's excellent. So it'll be up late Wednesday night, early Thursday morning for listeners.
Yeah, unless Jason falls out, but we'll figure it out.
Okay, well,
go check it out. Go check out Access Denied.
Okay, the tune is coming up now. Access Denied by Shane Smith and The Brady.
Limitless. LIMBITLESS.
Yeah. All right, we'll see you, Braden.
Thanks, guys.
You're crazy for this one, kid.
Hey, brother, what you gonna do when no limit runs wild on you?
Who would have thought when I was up in that bed, my life would have turned out the way that it did? Yeah. I first growing up, it was kind of hard as a kid, not getting how they be walking while I gotta sit. 26 years old, my life is legit. Yeah. And even though I'm in a chair, I keep a hustling, kid. Cause every day I stay on my grind. Sometimes I go left, sometimes I go right out of my mind. I don't wanna be rude, don't wanna look like a punk. Some days I wish I was tall enough to dunk. Live life to the extreme like I'm Terry Funk, and all the girlies call me the incredible hunk. I can't help it.
I'm gorgeous.
I got the body that they like. Only got half a hand. It's still enough to grab a mic. No feet, no Nikes, no pedals, no bikes. Can't go, you got a ramp. No, access denied.
Woo!
Access denied is to a double dot.
Yeah.
Access denied.